For Labor Day, we're playing some songs, as you can tell, about people's jobs. Wichita Lineman, I mean, that's an unlikely topic for a hit song, but that was a big hit song written by Jimmy Webb in 1968, a big hit for Glenn Campbell. We're talking with Lon Strickler, the author of Phantoms and Monsters Online, who's had some paranormal experiences of his own, but writes about it pretty much every day. When we come back, I'm going to take a little down a little laundry list of a couple of topics that he's written about recently, cryptid sort of news, and then we'll take some of your phone calls for my guest. Much more to come here at Coast to Coast AM. Lon, before the break, I asked you about something called the Wampus Cat. I mean, these big cats that are reported not only here, but all over the world, we're not talking about something that escaped from a zoo, right?
No. This is actually Native American tradition. It was said that a young Cherokee woman didn't trust her husband, and it was a custom for, because, you know, I heard this when I was younger. So it was a custom for the men of the tribe to hunt while the women did things around the camp. And now the women were forbidden to hunt. So one night, she placed the hide of a mountain cat on her body. She snuck out to spy on her husband to see what he did on his hunting trips. And as the hunters gathered around the campfire, the woman watched them. She became fascinated with the stories and the magic that was presented to the men of the Indian tribe. Now, the poor woman was caught, and for her crime, she was transformed into what's known as the Wampus Cat. A woman was doomed to forever be a half woman, half mountain cat. And the story goes that the ghost of the Wampus Cat walks around the hills of Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and in the West and the North Carolina. And you hear her howl because she made the grave mistake of becoming to nosing into something she wasn't supposed to, and she became the Wampus Cat.
I think I might have dated her or her sister. I thought one of the most disturbing.
You know, I received an inquiry from somebody back in 2008. I'm going to mention this real quick. This is somebody who was going to the University of Tennessee in Knoxville, and he said one night he was at his girlfriend's place, and we were talking about how I was walking back to his dorm with a friend of his. He said I was beside him, but very slightly ahead. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw what he appeared to be a man in a black cloak walk up to the friend to sort of lean into him, almost like he was going to put his hand on the friend's shoulder. Only when his hand fell on my friend's shoulder, he simply disappeared. Now, so I will admit that during this time, I was a bit tired from studying, but he said, he didn't know what to think about. So after he told his girlfriend the story, she told him that during the first week of school, she looked out her ground floor window and saw what appeared to be a human-sized cat walking on hind legs with glowing eyes. Now, he said he doesn't remember the details she gave him, but as far as how long it was there, how long, you know, she saw it. But, you know, he noted that the girl was from Minnesota, and she had no idea of anything called a Wampus Cat. So it's interesting because after I had received that letter, I probably received another two more inquiries of sightings in and around Knoxville. Now, I couldn't prove that they were true sightings, but it just seemed unusual because, quite honestly, before that time, I never really had thought about writing about the Wampus Cat.
Here's a, we'll go down a sort of a little list here of recent topics you've written about. Slender Man. It's been a few weeks since you've written about that, but this story is disturbing on multiple levels. Whether Slender Man exists or not, and there's, you know, good reason to suggest it's all made up. A couple of girls believed him to be real. They read something online and acted upon it. Tell me the story.
Well, the Slender Man is a fictional character. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. But, you know, apparently this, this slender man is dressed in a black suit, has no visible face, and he has very long arms and traps his prey and goes around with a voracious appetite stalking through parks and playgrounds. Slender Man, it was actually born in the Something Awful forums back in 2009 when a thread was created to challenge members to create fake Photoshop paranormal photographs. So, of course, somebody came up with this Slender Man image. You know, despite it being a complete fabrication, the legend spread like wildfire. And, you know, it became a YouTube sensation later on when a teenager by the name of Alex created the Marble Hornets Project, in which he took segments of video and put it together to, you know, create a sinister story about this Slender Man that was stalking him. And then Alex kind of took himself out of the picture, mysteriously vanished. And the video clips he left behind became increasingly disturbing as the Slender Man peered from distant corners. And it was up there, and it's still up there. And apparently, some, you know, with these girls were involved, it got onto another board, and it kind of evolved into another meme. And unfortunately, they took it for granted of being something serious, and
well, in a way, there's two girls, what they tried to kill somebody, or they did kill somebody, or are charged with it.
They attempted to kill another friend of theirs. The one girl was actually diagnosed with mental illness. So, you know, something like that, somebody with mental illness, you know, that's a bad combination.
Well, I mean, it became real to them. I mean, that legend, for one reason or another, gained power and became real enough to drive them to do something kind of drastic.
Well, you know, that's a lot of times that does happen. I mean, there are these, you know, you heard these phenomena called thought form phenomena, where, you know, people actually create entities with their mind. You know, if actually, the poltergeist phenomena is basically a thought form or tulpa-type phenomena. It's created by a human being, somebody that's within the family, within the area where the poltergeist activity is taking place. And there's nothing really spiritual about it, but it can manifest into some pretty horrible phenomena, and in some cases it's been deadly.
Well, it kind of goes back to what I was asking about before in terms of self-censorship, whether you have to draw the line somewhere. At some point, you have to invoke some kind of a skepticism, a level of skepticism, or at least question, by writing about this stuff, do I give it power? Do I give it legs?
Yeah, and there have been times when I have received some pretty disturbing articles, and I just won't, you know, I won't put them out there. You know, I try to use the best judgment. I like to leave it up to the readers. You know, I also like to be able to give people voice in what they believe. But sometimes, you know, it's better just to, you know, just to hold off on something like that. I may try to, you know, put a few blurbs out there to try to get people ready for it, see what they think about it before I put the actual story out there. But so far, I think I've done a pretty good job as far as censoring what goes on.
Before we go to the phones, well, we'll go there in a minute. Just warning you, I want to ask you at some point in the program about whether there's a unified theory of weirdness that ties all this stuff together. UFOs, poltergeists, Slender Man, legends and lore and that sort of a thing. Well, I'll let you think about that for a while, but we'll go to the phones now, see what's on people's minds. A first-time caller, Ellen in Arkansas. Hi, Ellen. You're on with Lon Strickler.
Hi. I was listening to you, which I frequently do. I'm a truck driver, and I heard the band talking about Sykesville, Maryland. And I grew up in Sykesville, Maryland. Well, that was my mailing address, but Sykesville is outside of Baltimore, and between Baltimore and Sykesville, if you go from Sykesville into Baltimore, you cross two bridges that cross a lake called Liberty. And there's a big dam there. Well, in the early 20s, they flooded that valley, and they created the water system for Baltimore area. And that is huge amounts of miles and miles and miles of forest out there. And I lived right between those two bridges and back the road, kind of right on the edge of this forest. And if you went back the road from where I lived and you made a right, you went out there, and there was like a little islet there that the kids used to go back there and they'd party, and they'd, you know, that was their parking area. And one night, apparently several people saw one of these things, called the police, and they basically swamped that entire area for miles around looking for it. And it's kind of a very interesting area, but to hear that it's been seen again, or the child of one been seen again, was incredibly interesting.
Ellen, what year are you talking about?
This was back in the 70s. This must have been 30 years ago. And that area that I was telling you about, you went back Oakland Mills Road, which is, I lived right off of Oakland Mills Road. If you went back Oakland Mills Road, it eventually went to an end. And they used to call that area Blueberry Hill. And it was in the papers. It was everybody in the town, or, you know, everybody within miles, because that was a small farming community at that time. You know, that was not a big built-up area at that time. I haven't been back to Sykesville for probably 20 years, so I don't really know how much it's grown up, but that area grows up like overnight, it seems. But that area right there, it's all protected. It's all reservoir area. It's Baltimore City's water supply. They don't allow boats on the lake. No big boats, just little bitty fish, you know, like flat bottom boats.
Lon, your reaction to Ellen's story there, the area she's describing must sound somewhat familiar, right?
Oh, I know the area well. It's Oakland Mill Road. Actually, when you drove, used to drive Oakland Mill Road back in the 70s, there was a church at the end of it. And she's talking about Blueberry Hill. And yeah, there have been sightings in that area. In fact, the Liberty Reservoir, which is part of Tapestry State Park, there had been a lot of sightings all up and down the park itself. So, yeah, it's heavy in Bigfoot activity. And, in fact, there have been five A-classified BFRO sightings in that area since the BFRO has been taking sighting reports.
Ellen, thank you for calling in and your first time on the air with us here on Coast to Coast, and keep on trucking out there. Thanks for the call. Wow, that's sort of confirmation that it's been going on even longer than your sighting.
Oh, yeah. It's there have been, you know, I talked to a lot of people. And in fact, the initial Sykesville Monster flap was back in the early 70s. Around the time of the flooding from Hurricane Agnes. And this Sykesville Monster actually busted into chicken pens, into dog pens, and actually one instance where it busted into a house. So I had interviewed a lot of those people after my sighting, and I uncovered a lot more sightings that were actually reported.
Seems like there should be some police records. I don't know how accessible the records from the police department is.
Yeah, well, you know, I was on, they did a segment on Monsters and Mysteries of America this past season on the Sykesville Monster. And it was stated in there that the police have no record of anything. All that stuff was is gone.
We have other people on the phones, but I don't want to cut them off because we're going to a break here in a couple of minutes. Let me ask you the story. We mentioned about the Wampus and Slender Man. You've reported about Lizard Man over the years, all kinds of different kinds of mysteries, UFOs, ghosts. Is there sort of a unified theory that ties them together? I mean, and I ask it in this context, is that all of these mysteries seem to be tantalizingly close, but just out of our reach. People think there's going to be some big UFO disclosure. I'm not among them, that we're going to solve that mystery. It seems like the nature of the beast is that it shows us glimpses and we think we're going to get close, but we never quite get there.
I don't believe we're ever going to have any actual disclosure as far as UFOs. But as far as what you ask, you know, if there's a tie-in, yeah, I think there is a connection with most paranormal activity and was with cryptids as well. I think there is a connection somehow. Can I explain? No, but I think there is a connection. The veil has seemed to thin somewhat over recent years. I don't know if it's because more people are reporting about it, because of the internet or whatever, but there does seem to be a lot more activity overall in the paranormal world.
It seems to be this, that whatever it is telling us that reality isn't what it used to be, that our idea of the world needs to be adjusted.
You know, I tell everybody, keep an open mind, because believe me, there's something going on.
It's as if it's a learning curve, you know, bringing us along a step at a time to understand that the universe or reality as we know it is much bigger and more mysterious than we can imagine.
And I think there's a lot to that. I think we're kind of being spoon-fed a lot of this somehow by whatever force there is. But, you know, there does seem to be more and more of it going on. And, you know, hopefully in my lifetime, maybe more will be, you know, will come forward. Maybe we'll learn more. But, you know, I think there is a definite connection.
Well, it's very frustrating. I mean, it's fun to pursue this stuff and we have a lot more information on various topics than we used to have. But again, it's always just a little bit further out of our reach. Oh, if we just had a little bit more info about UFOs, we might be able to tell what planet they're from or whether they're interdimensionals or how their craft work. And we just never quite get there.
That's what I do. What I do, you know, that's the whole premise for what I do with the blog. And the radio show and everything I do, people want to know, and I try to provide that for them within reason.
You said it yourself. You hope to have some answers while you're still alive. The idea that you might not is that doesn't just chase you away from the pursuit.
No, you know that I'm just, you know, it may get frustrating at times, but I just hope that something of significance is discovered or comes forward while I'm still around.
Lon Strickler is my guest of Phantoms and Monsters, Strange Encounters. We'll go back to the phones right after this on Coast to Coast and see what's on your mind. The Beatles, Hard Day's Night, talking about a hardworking schedule for those Liverpool lads for our Labor Day coverage. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Here's the last of our Labor Day songs, and it's a perfect one. 40-Hour Week by Alabama. Good pick, Nathan. Kind of epitomizes what Labor Day is all about there. We're talking with Lon Strickler, paranormal researcher and writer, and we'll go right back to the phones, get to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're in our final segment with Lon Strickler, who, as I mentioned at the top of the show, has a very broad range of paranormal knowledge and experiences. And so we'll go to the phones and see what's on your mind. West of the Rockies, Chris in Utah, been holding for a while. Thanks for your patience, Chris. What's on your mind?
Hello, George and Lon. My question would be, have you had any reports upon the Grand Canyon, the Kaibab Forest? Because I had some really weird things going on up there about a month ago. I was up there camped, and anyway, I was having a kind of rough time. And anyway, later at night, about probably 2 in the morning, I slept in the back of my truck, and I had my dog in the front. And he's pretty wore out from, you know, hiking around. And that whole area is covered with Indian graves all over up in that area up there, but it's in a really rough canyon. Anyway, about 2 in the morning, I snore real loud, I guess. Anyway, I was snoring away and sleeping in my sleeping bag, and something grabbed me on the head in the sleeping bag and grabbed me and pushed my head down real hard. And of course, I, you know, come to and gulped, and I reached for a handgun. I had one with me there, and I just froze in, you know, complete terror. This thing had a huge hand, and then the truck rocked, and it's like it was leaning over the top of the truck into the back. You know, that's where I was in the back of the pickup, and then it commenced to tear my garbage up, and it threw a can or kicked it or whatever, but this can landed probably 30 yards away. And I listened to it tear through stuff, and then I slowly heard it munching up the canyon on the gravel up the, you know, the canyon bed up through the rocky ledges, and I was terrified until daybreak. And then I, you know, I got up and went looking for it, and there was pools of water way up there in the slick rock way up on top, and they were kind of muddy, like something had been in there. I couldn't find any tracks. I'm a good tracker, you know, but I could not find any tracks or nothing. But I just wonder if you had any reports of anything around the Kaibab forest up there on the Grand Canyon.
Wow, Chris, it's not a bear, right? Are there bears in the area?
Well, yeah, and cougars and everything else, but this thing was able to lean over the top of the truck and grab me on the head in the sleeping bag and push my head down. And, you know, of course, as soon as I jolted, it kind of released its grip, and then I could feel its claws dragging back off the sleeping bag as the truck rocked as it got off. And of course, if they would have got back in, I would have opened up on it. I did have a handgun in each hand by then, but I was completely frozen in terror because this thing, I figured, was just enormous, whatever it was. But I have yet to explain what could have happened. I don't think it was any one of the above. You know, I don't know. But my friends are all making fun of me and stuff, and it's not very funny to me about it.
No, it doesn't sound funny. Lon, any thoughts?
I just wondered if Lon had any reports in that area by the Kaibab. You know, that forest is, you know, 60 miles long down through there, but I just wonder if he had any reports about other strange things happening up in them area.
Yeah, offhand, I can't think of any, though there have been, you know, Bigfoot sightings in that area. You know, I'd like for you to possibly write this down and send it to me if you could. I could look into it a little further. I'm kind of interested to maybe finding out what did happen to you, and I can kind of run it by a couple people that I know in the area.
Yeah, Chris, I'll tell you, the whole state of Utah is punctuated with Native American sites. As you mentioned, there's a lot of Indian graves in that area, but that the whole state of Utah has a rich, long paranormal history. I can share some stories with you myself. If you'll send me an email separate from this, and then I'll put you in contact with Lon as well. I think he'd like to have some more detail on your story.
Yeah, I'm just glad that I didn't have my head exposed out of the sleeping bag, but I'll never again not, you know, sleep with something or a canopy over the top of the truck or whatever, but I still really, you know, at odds what that was, because it was huge, whatever it was. But
wow. Oh, well, thanks for sharing with us, and hope you'll send both of us a message.
All right. Thanks
all
a
right.
lot.
Thanks. On the wildcard line, Cody in Winchester, Kentucky. Good morning, Cody. You're on with Lon.
Hey, thanks, guys. On the topic of Slender Man, you know, I'm not disputing that it was made up onto Something Awful forms, but you know, they've actually talked about a creature really similar in some really old German folklore, and I was wondering if Lon had heard anything about that or had any opinion on it.
Yeah, there have been similar type sightings of something that, you know, that kind of resembles a Slender Man. As far as a specific legend or whatever from whatever country, I can't really think of one. There is an entity called the Wraith that they also that has also been seen by people mostly up in the northeastern part of the United States. I don't know if it's an area thing, just, you know, indigenous to one area, but there have been similar sightings. Now, I don't know if they're actual spirits, entities, or what they are, but there have been sightings.
Cody, do you have more details about the one you're talking about in Europe?
I can't think of the exact name of it, but, I mean, it was just different research on different sites. You know, because I found out about it through the Marble Hornet, like you had discussed. But, you know, it was just an interesting creature to me, you know, because, I mean, to me it almost seemed like it was more of like a something that would be like subconsciously in all of us, because it's just, it's humanoid, but it doesn't have a face. It's almost like, you know, our darker side.
And that's does it feels like it's something you'd see in a dream, doesn't it? It feels like something that we've all had in a nightmare.
Exactly.
Well, Lon, it does touch a nerve, whether it's made up or not. It touches a nerve in people. And maybe it's a kind of thing where you create this, as you were talking about earlier, but you open up a door and you invite it in.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, just for instance, say somebody was using divination or Ouija board or such, and they kind of created and manifested something like this while doing that. That's very possible.
Cody, thanks for that call. We're going to Jocelyn in Wisconsin on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Jocelyn. You're on with Lon Strickler.
Hi, George. I never got a chance to tell you in person, but I'm very glad that you recovered from your illness a while back. Okay, I couldn't get in when the other person that Melba Ketchum was on.
Right.
And I was going to ask if they thought, since there's human DNA, that maybe that might be the missing link always talking about. You know, the missing link that they're always talking about?
That's a good question. Maybe Lon has a thought on that. Lon, have you taken it that far?
I really couldn't answer for Mel, but she'd be the one to ask.
Jocelyn, what made you think of that?
I don't know. That just because of the DNA, the human DNA, and, you know, every time they find fossilized humans, you know, from cavemen and all that, they always mention, you know, that there's a missing link. So that just came into my head.
All right. Well, appreciate the call. In general, Lon, your take on Melba's study, I mean, it's never going to get published, is it?
Oh, I'm kind of hoping it will one day. But she's going to need some cooperation.
Well, I don't know if you heard much of the interview, but she said she's got some form of peer review underway right now. The three pretty highly credentialed professionals are taking a look at her data and going over it with a fine-tooth comb, and whether or not that makes it into a journal, that's another question. Go to the Wildcard Line, John in Long Beach. Good morning, John. You're on with Lon Strickler.
Hi, long-time listener, frequent caller. I'm from West Virginia, Lon, not in northern West Virginia, not far from where you're from, really, geographically. And as you know, West Virginia is rife with those kind of things, like the Braxton County Monster. And I had a friend that's not prone to hyperbole that insists when he's from Bluefield, West Virginia, and east of there, it's desolate woods, and he had a cabin out there. And he swore that he saw a Bigfoot or something like it that followed him. And he said he'd seen it more than once, and he ran to this general store type in the area, and they said, yeah, we've had other people come in and say that. But that's not my real question. My question is to you is, of all the legends and all the cryptoids and all the things you've studied, which do you think would be the most likely to actually be real? My bet is you're going to say Bigfoot.
Yeah, that would be what I would say, because that's had, you know, there have been more sightings of the Bigfoot, but, you know, there's a lot we just don't know. But I would say to answer your question, yeah, it would be the Bigfoot phenomenon.
Are you familiar with the Braxton County Monster? I'm from Parkersburg, West Virginia, which you probably know where it is. They had a UFO sighting. Look it up sometime, Georgia. Woodrow Durenberger. Guy said he talked to
him. I've seen the pictures that have been put out. The Braxton County Monster. I do believe it probably is a Bigfoot.
A lot of people saw it. See, that's the problem. That's the problem with the officials. That a lot of people claim they saw it.
Yeah,
it's a lot harder to dismiss a story with that many witnesses, but that exists in the UFO field as well. Thanks, John. It's always good to hear from you. Thanks for calling. International Line, Rob in Vancouver. You're on with Lon. How you doing?
I'll be really quick. I know we're running out of time. Maybe if could you please make a comment, and you know, I just want to say a bit of an experience and maybe a bit what you've seen out there. I went on a Bigfoot quote-unquote research expedition with a very prominent research group. They had you know, Sasquatch group. They had marketed this thing. My experience, I'm fortunate I, you know, have means. So I went out. I've never camped before. I went out and I bought all the equipment, night vision, thermal, cameras, 35-millimeter cameras, 8-millimeter movie camera projectors, and so on. I went out there, and it was absolutely nothing that they had marketed. And they, you know, I got this 100-page booklet to read, which I figured out at the end ended up being almost like an indoctrination. So everything you saw out there was like, oh, my God, that's a Bigfoot. That's a Bigfoot.
Oh, boy.
You know, and unfortunately, I recorded, you know, there were things they told. I mean, I was blown away how little equipment they had. And I taped everything, I recorded everything on the expedition. I mean, unfortunately, you know, at the end, a bunch of my technology had disappeared or had been taken, you know, because I guess there was some negative stuff said on it all. But maybe a comment on your comment on experiences or knowledge of negative, I don't say negative groups, but, you know, things to be leery of, you know,
I'll tell you right off the bat, I don't subscribe to these groups that charge people to go out on these expeditions. You know, I really don't. I think the best thing for someone who wants to go out is to find a group that we have, you know, where it's an actual group that you belong to, and there are like-minded people in that group that are interested in doing the actual research. The fact of going out and paying somebody $500-$600 to take you out, I don't subscribe to that, and I never have. I think if you are interested in it, that you should go and find an actual club or group that does this on a regular basis and get involved with that.
Yeah, there's people that do it just for the pure joy of doing the research and being out in the woods, and gosh, somebody that's going to charge you a bunch of money for it, and that's a red flag. Sorry to hear about your experience, Rob. That's terrible. But thank you for calling in and letting
us
know. That's good words of wisdom, a good warning to anybody else out there who might be thinking about doing that. Try to get one more call in. East of the Rockies, Joe in Lake of the Ozarks. How you doing, Joe?
Hi. Yes, I was wondering if Ron thought there might be some type of national security interest as far as maybe Sasquatch DNA and just Sasquatch and it just individual being
kept. I think there is. You know, Melvin mentioned something about supposed Bigfoot bodies being seen and then disappear. I mean, I've heard a lot of those stories myself, and I think the government does have an interest in this. For whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're not going to tell you, but I have heard stories, and in particular, the eruption at Mount St. Helens, where several bodies were supposedly found after that eruption, and I have heard three different stories in three different instances, and those bodies never showed up. So I believe it does happen.
Yes, I was wondering if maybe I know an owl out on the West Coast had probably shut down the foresting industry there for a while. I was wondering as far as maybe a habitat, you know, some groups could maybe want to shut down the, you know, forest industry or something. That could be some type of national security interest, you know, that the government may be interested in, you know.
Yeah, that's a thought. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's a possibility. Economic concerns in a particular region. Because, I mean, I could see that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what the instance would be, but, yeah, that's a thought.
What's your take on Dave Politis missing 411? I mean, he started out as a Bigfoot researcher, and it sort of morphed into missing people in national parks. That certainly seems to be a pretty sensitive issue that they'd want to keep under a lid.
Yeah, you know, I've interviewed Dave before when I was with Beyond the Edge, and I'd like to get him on the our show now at Arcane Radio, but he. You know, I've read his books, and I think he's onto something. I really do. And, you know, the whole fact that just people just suddenly disappear for whatever reason, I'm not going to come out and say right off that there's a Bigfoot doing it. I mean, there may be something else behind it. But it's real curious. And, he does put it out there, and... you know, I don't know what to make of it, but, you know, I guess the overall theory is maybe it is some type of cryptid, you know, snatching these people or whatever.
I have no idea, and Dave has been pretty careful about not committing to any kind of an explanation. Although, yeah. Bigfoot-like creatures do pop up in some of the reports. They're not seen in all the reports. It's very similar to UFO abductions in some regards, except for a lot of these people don't come back at all.
Yeah, and I've been a part of those type of investigations as well, and in particular the Todd Sees investigation and that disappearance, and we've been working on that now for about a year and a half, and that in itself is something. Totally different, you know.
Anything
no
else big?
Explanation to that.
We got about 30
Pardon?
Seconds, Lon. Lon, we got about 30 seconds. Anything else big coming in the cryptid world?
I don't know. I can't really think of anything offhand, but, you know, if somebody sends something to me, believe me, I'll have it up there on the blog.
Anything coming in your career, the reach of your blog? You know what? That music tells us we're out of time. Lon, thank you for joining us. It's always interesting to have you, and we'll do it again.
Okay, thanks, George.
Good. See you again. Hope you folks will check out the links to Phantoms and Monsters. It's always a good read. Also want to say, hope you enjoy your holiday, your Labor Day holiday. And if you're happening to be working tomorrow, well, it's good to have a job, I guess. Thanks to my earlier guest, Dr. Melba Ketchum, and to my colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Nathan Staten, Gina Salvati, our webmaster Lex, Chris Boros. And good night, everyone. I'll be back next month.